This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. It's Raise Your Game, and we've got Roshan Tiran from Leadernomics here. And you know, we've been going through history.
Yeah, that's right. It's a continued history lesson.
It's Raise Your Game / history lesson. Today is leadership lessons from Thomas Jefferson.
Yep.
Why Thomas Jefferson?
Thomas Jefferson is, you know, I mean, if you look at all the charismatic leaders, I mean, I talk about Ben Franklin, who's my favorite, and then, you know, we didn't go to George Washington, but maybe I'll get there one day. But you know, if you think about American history, right, none changed America as much as Thomas Jefferson. This is a legislator from Virginia. He was born in 1743.
More than Abraham Lincoln?
Well, Abraham Lincoln to some extent. But if you think about, and I'll walk you through some of these things that Jefferson did. Because Abraham Lincoln had a big decision to make, and he held on firm to that decision. But Jefferson actually, you know, I think Ben Franklin probably had a lot more, but Jefferson were one of those that actually laid the foundations so that people like Abraham Lincoln and others to today can make their mark, right? So he was born in 1743, lived to 1826, but he didn't have the gift of great orators or, you know, one of those racketeers or you know, but he possessed this powerful flair for writing, you know, which you'll notice. I mean, leaders tend to be great orators, but he had this wisdom, judgment, this diplomacy about him, right? And he studied at this College of William and Mary in Williamsburg in Virginia. And he used to study like 10 hours a day, study. And then after he practiced the violins for hours, right? So this is a guy that you just
look at. Every mother's model child.
But just character-wise, right?
Yeah.
So focused, so like, okay, it's really about getting this done. It's really about action. It's a biasness to execute, right? And he started his career in law in 1767. And he wrote this pamphlet in 1774 called A Summary View of the Rights of British America, right? And he said that basically in there, he started this rebellious thing. Like, he said British Parliament had no authority to exert control over the American colonies. That's essentially the essence of this pamphlet, right? And so he's, you know, from this pamphlet started his, you know, involvement into the political sphere. And then, of course, the American Revolutionary War broke out in 1775. And he was then selected as a delegate to the Second Continental Congress. And then this is what's interesting. At that point in time, he was age 33, right? He was invited to write the Declaration of Independence. So this is that statement, right?
Yeah.
That till today, right?
Still
ultimately
stands.
Became the Constitution, right?
Yeah.
Till today, right? And with hardly any amendments. I mean, you think about the Malaysian Constitution with the hundreds and hundreds of amendments, right? And you think of the American Constitution, hardly, you know, it's a handful.
It's perennial.
Still a valid document.
Yeah,
valid.
And it's, you know, like no matter what technology, everything, these things, these principles still hold true.
Still become the guy. Yeah. So, and he was the guy at 33, right? He was invited to draft it. Again, because of his flair for writing. And so on and so forth, right? And this was formally adopted on July 4th, Independence Day, 1776, right? So prior to drafting the Declaration, of course, he spent a lot of time, and this was interesting, he discussed it with a 5-member committee, which included John Adams, which is the second president, and he was the third president, and Ben Franklin.
Ah.
Of course, again, Ben Franklin comes in. Again, here's that amazing Ben. He's always everywhere. He's the inventor, writer, mayor, drafted the Constitution, and so on and so forth. And the other piece that, after that, it didn't stop, right? So he next started to draft the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom. So he authored it in the late 70s, and then it came into law in 1786. But this would then lead to the First Amendment of the Constitution, which is, you know, endows people with the freedom to worship as they choose, right? So there was this amendment, the First Amendment, right, which is the freedom to worship, or freedom to and that was, again, partly, again, he wrote it, but the amendments to it, he also had a say in the First Amendment that happened to it. So that's a bit about Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, you know? And this is like 300 years ago. How, you know, you would think it would be very puritanical at that time, and yet this freedom to worship, right,
was enshrined already.
Right? So what were some of the lessons of leadership we can learn from Jefferson?
So Jefferson is a guy, I mean, a guy, anyone that reads, right, or studies tends to have a lot of ideas, right? And that's the difference. You know, there are many people that read stuff and got lots of ideas, but they don't execute it. You know, again, Ben Franklin is very similar. Wow, he's always, it has this certain character, the character of hard work, ethics, and so on. But there's also this power of execution, which, you know, there's this author, John Meckham, who wrote this book, Thomas Jefferson, The Art of power, right? And he said this, Jefferson had a remarkable capacity to marshal ideas and to move men, to balance the inspirational and the pragmatic. So here's to Jefferson, essentially, he said, ideas, you know, they're worthless, right? I mean, okay, great, I got lots of it, but the quality of, the where it's really important is to translate that idea into reality. And he said that's where leaders fail. We have lots of ideas. We have lots of things floating around. But the translation of ideas into action is not something that happens naturally. Mm. It's something that we have to put in place. It's, you know, this morning I was writing a bit about Margaret Thatcher and studying. So as I was reading, I was like, again, this woman, right? Same thing, right? It's the ability to execute. You can talk. She's very witty. You know, all these brilliant ideas. But to ruthlessly execute,
yeah,
meaning to make sure that you're like very steadfast. This is where I want to go. This is how we're going to get there and get it done, right?
And you know what? Like her or not, you know, she was willing to be unpopular,
absolutely,
to do what do what she felt was the right thing.
Yeah. And later this year, we'll spend a whole episode on her. Once I finish writing about her, we'll talk a little bit about her. Now. Yeah, we'll do all these people. But the beautiful thing I like about history is this, right? We always say that history repeats itself because we don't study history, because we don't understand that. Hey, these guys went through a whole bunch. If we can take their experiences, we then are able to add it into our own experiences and become smarter. And then we don't allow history to repeat itself. We don't allow these wars, this craziness. I mean, 6,000 years of known history and we're still doing the same thing that you read, you know, in early literature about men fighting with each other, wars about stupid things. And, you know, it's the same thing. And part of it is us not trying to understand. And to me, part of it is like, look, I think there's a lot of great leaders out there today, but maybe we can start with the base of trying to understand the past and then let's connect with the present and then let's recreate that future. But Jefferson, I think this bias for action is a clear lesson to me. One big lesson that I can take away, this biasness to say, I want to get things done. You know, you have to fill yourself with ideas, because without that, you won't be able to get excitement and the energy to want to get that, right? So devote a chunk of your life to learn, to read, to learn, to hear others, to hear these ideas. But these exciting visions of the future can only happen if you devote significant time and effort to execution, to translation of these ideas into reality. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about these early leaders in not just US, like UK, in all these countries, even Malaysia, right?
We never learn because we've got pride. That's why. Now, Jefferson also became the president of the US, right? So were there lessons to be learned there too?
Yeah, you know, and so March 4th, 1801, Thomas Jefferson became the third president and the first to be sworn in a ceremony. So before that, there was no swearing-in ceremony, right? So even early on his presidency, right, he did something very weird for a president. His administration purchased the Louisiana Territory from France for $15 million US. You know, basically doubling America. So for $15 million US, I mean, you think about it today, right? Oh, wow, what a bargain, right? I mean, but so he doubled, and this, you know, I was thinking about it. I'm like, this guy's, you know, most of the time, how do you double? In the olden days, you double your territories by fighting, right? By going to war, right? But he so cleverly doubled his territories, not by war, but by purchase, right? Mm. Let's negotiate, let's talk, let's dialogue, let's figure out. And I think this set the tone for a lot of American politics. I mean, in many times, there was this whole thing about dialogue, about negotiations, about trying to win without hurting the other person, in the sense that, oh, okay, I gave them 15. So for France at that point in time, okay, it was a good deal.
Yeah.
But maybe now on hindsight, like, well, why did we do that, right? But again, it was, they felt the winner and these guys. And I think the other thing that he did really interesting was that he commissioned an exploration of uncharted land that was beyond, right? Mm. So this, you know, and for the first time, right, he started to get valuable information about Native American tribes, animal, plant life, the geography of the western part of the continent. And you know, as I was reading some of these things, I realized that, you know, curiosity, we always talk about curiosity, but why did he commission such things? Why was he able to buy the land? Because he must have been asking questions. He must have been curious, you know, hey, can we double our land? Maybe we should talk to the France, you know. Maybe they don't want the land. I hardly see them around. So as he explores, as he explores, he starts to realize that, hey, maybe there's an opportunity here. Maybe this, and I think questions, right, curiosity. And again, I don't know. We don't live in a time where we are with a fly in the wall listening to Thomas Jefferson. But you know, you got the sense that this guy's curious, because there's no other reason why we commission a study to look at places outside, right? To look at territories, to understand plant life, to study the Native American tribes. I mean, why would you do that, right? But curiosity, right, it's a key element, I think, in great leaders, right? They're happy about what they're doing here, and they're very steadfast into getting and resolute to achieve their vision, but they're also curious about what's happening the other side, what's happening in the side of them, behind them, you know, in front of them, ahead of them, on top of them.
Yeah.
And I think that sets the tone to say, okay, we can do what we achieve, but when we've achieved it, we always have a new vision. We always have new sight. Yeah. And I think that's one of the big things. I mean, one of the first tones that I think this thirst for knowledge, this thirst to grow, the thirst to execute, the thirst to always expand, right? He set the tone, I think, for the U.S., you know. Mm. And you know, it started with a couple of territories, right? And then you got a 50, 51 states. I mean, you had that momentum that's kicking in. And yeah. I think Thomas Jefferson set the tone for too many Thomases.
And I think, you know, basically it's not to rest on your laurels, right? We'll talk a little bit more about Thomas Jefferson and leadership lessons from him with Roshan Chin from Leadernomics after this. Stay tuned to Raise Your Game on Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Race Again. Good morning. Frida Liu here. Roshan Chin from Leadernomics with me. We talk about leadership lessons from Thomas Jefferson. We can always learn from history. And sometimes we don't want history to repeat itself. But you were saying earlier on that Jefferson was a long-term leader and not just a short-term focused leader. So what does that mean?
Yeah, so I you know, if you look back at some of the actions that he did, when George Washington, the first president of the U.S., was president, Jefferson was the Secretary of State. So one of the first things he did in his role was to bring up this issue of pirates that were off the Barbary coast of North Africa. Now, what happened, you know, these pirates used to kidnap Americans and hijack ships that were trying to ply their trade around there. And Washington, you know, at that point, President Washington, he didn't want to get into a war and refused to budge, right? So then during the second term of the second president, you know, John Adams, Jefferson again brought up this issue. But again, no resolution, no issue. I mean, we have so many problems in the U.S. Why are we bothered about problems outside, right? And he could not get Congress to support his vision of ensuring that the trade routes were clear for all to navigate safely. So what he did was, again, you know, curiosity, right? He began to start studying these pirates. So in the next couple of years, right, he started looking at their culture, how they attacked. He even started studying the Quran because a number of them were of that background. So he just wanted to understand the background. And so finally, he became the third president, right? So when he became the president, he was fully prepared for the battle. He's already studied these guys, studied their roots, studied why, studied even their background and their thinking and their mentality, right? And he started implementing his strategy in stages. And after a long time, right, he won, right? He destroyed a lot of these pirates. And, you know, today, if you think about American military powers and think of the basis for American foreign policy, right, you know, this whole thing about ensuring citizens are never taken victim by foreign terrorists, and all these things, right? Jefferson really set the ball rolling in those days, right? And what he did was he cleared out those routes, making America, the route to America, around America, you know, to and fro America safe, right?
Yeah.
And it took a long time, but it was something that, you know, if you think about leaders today, like, would you be willing to wait decades and decades before getting this, right? So he tried, it didn't work. He tried again, the second president didn't. When he became president, he had the power to do it. He made that happen. And then it took a long time to win, right? And he did, right? And today, I think many times, we have short-term vision, no? Okay, we think about the quarter, the year. You know, are we thinking 20 years, 30 years? Or really about how do we create this organization that's built to last? And I think Jefferson, he looked at the U.S. and that's why, you know, the U.S. very lucky to have leaders like that, right? That were steadfast to the long-term vision of building a nation that was a mighty nation, not just thinking about themselves internally, right? Mm. But thinking of them externally, right? And I think many times, I mean, we talk about Thatcher, right? Great leaders will always face hostility and opposition. And, you know, whatever they do, there's always going to be critics, right? And Jefferson said this, "I suppose, indeed, that in public life, a man whose political principles have any decided character and who has energy enough to give them effect must always expect to counter political hostility from those of adverse principles." And we saw this, right? Everyone hated Margaret Thatcher. You know, Jack Welch was the Neutron Jack. Yeah. You know, whenever principles that they hold, and which are very firm, this is how we are going to do it, they're not going to go to the side or left or right. But the rest of the world, right, at that point in time, whether it was Galileo in the early centuries who said, "Nah, the world is round," and everybody said, you know, until he died, and Socrates, you know, had to drink the poison hemlock because of the differing views they had, they're very clear that this is what they want to do. And they end up changing the world.
It's like Donald Trump.
Maybe.
Now, Jefferson was also known as a giving leader. Why is this so?
Yeah, so, you know, when Jefferson won re-election as president in 1804, his second stint as in the office was somewhat turbulent, right? Because you had he had to, you know, he kept America out. He tried to keep America out of the Napoleonic Wars, but failed. And then his country went to war again with Britain in 1812. And it was also during that time that the British burned the U.S. Capitol, which housed the Library of Congress, right? And so here's it, no, the Library of, I mean, Jefferson, remember, the guy who reads, the guy who writes, the guy, you know, books is everything. And so the Library of Congress, right, which houses you know, thousands, I think 15,000-20,000 books, right? And then at the same time, the other big library was Jefferson's own personal collection. So Jefferson had about 7,000 books in his own library. And, you know, after the whole thing burned, he thought about it. He said, you know what? I'm going to give. And he treasured his books, really, you know, because in those old days, we don't go and buy books, right? Books were not so easy to come by, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something that were mass available.
And, you can order online.
Yeah, exactly. And Jefferson was collecting, right? The Ben Franklin, the this. I mean, he's really accumulated. And many books were from Europe at that time, right? The great thinkers from Europe, and so on. And the great stories like the Dantes. So he had about 7,000, almost, you know, 7,000 books, which he donated / sold to Congress, right? To rebuild this library collection. And I know, you know, as you read of it, it's one of the hardest things to do is to give up your collection, right? But it was for the good of the country. It was for the good of the nation, right? And I think many times we look at leaders today, right? It's even if you run a company, many times it's about our own self-interest and it's not about the organization's self-interest. I think Jefferson gave up his prized collection to rebuild his country's library. What are we giving up to rebuild our organizations? What are we, you know, giving up? You know, I know we say time and so on and so forth, but what else are we giving up, you know? And I think the giving leader is the person that is going to be successful down the road. And sometimes it's give, you may not see it today, but there's a long-term effect many years later. Now, in his later years, right, when he was age 76, Jefferson actually helped to found the University of Virginia. He himself was involved in the design of the school buildings, curriculum, and right, I mean, unusual for that time, right? The university had no religious affiliation, nor were religious requirements made of the students. Because prior to that, right, you had this university that was for Catholics and so on and so forth, right? So he created a university that was free, you know, was totally, you know, not bound by religions, but bound by thinking, by, you know, like let's have a university where people get to think and decide for themselves. And so there was University of Virginia was one of the first universities that had no affiliation. So, and I think leaders that give, right? And Jefferson, again, to set up the university, to give, to end to the endowment, to set that up, you know, it's something that you give. But and we see this happen with leaders, you know, it's we always take a lot, you know, and then at some point in time, right, we realize, oh, we've took too much, and then we give, right? So you see the Carnegies, the, you know, all these, the Rockefellers, you know, they reach a point, they become I have to be this philanthropist to give of myself. But I think great leaders are consistent givers, right? Not just giving when they've reached the point where I know I'm going to go now and I can take nothing with me, so I better give, right?
Yeah.
But it's guys that continuously throughout their life give, you know, like Jefferson gave his books, and I think throughout his time, you know, he was giving. He's a man who gave, right? I think giving leaders are the ones that really create those big lasting legacies. Okay. That's something that we can learn from Jefferson as the giving leader.
He also wrote the Decalogue.
Yeah.
What is this?
So he died at the age of 83 in Virginia. And you know when he died, right? On July 4th, 1826, the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And not only that, right? John Adams, who was his rival, the second president, also died on the same day. So it's ironic that they both died on the 50th anniversary of or the 50th Independence Day of the US. But prior to that, right, just 1 year before he died, he was asked to give some advice to his newborn grandson, of a close friend of his. And so Jefferson, you know, being the writer he is, he jotted down a few pieces of advice, and he referred to it as the Decalogue of Canons for Observation in Practical Life,
right.
Something like that. So these canons, he helped him, he said these canons helped him, Jefferson, to navigate various challenges and obstacles throughout his life. And let me read 10 of them, right, which I think will be interesting. So number one, never put off till tomorrow what you can do today. So this is Jefferson, right? So the stuff is never put off tomorrow till what you can do or what you can do today. That's Jefferson's, one of the things from the Decalogue. Right? Yeah. And number two, never trouble another for what you can do yourself. Okay, that's again the second one. Number three, never spend your money before you have it. Again, these are very practical stuff, right? Never buy what you do not want because it is cheap. It will be dear to you. right? Yeah. So never buy what you want because it is cheap, it will be dear to you. Number five, pride causes more than hunger, thirst or cold. And you talked about this, it's not about pride and leaders, right? So, I mean, Jefferson also says, pride causes more than hunger, thirst and cold. Number six, we never repent of having eaten too little. So we eat too much.
That one maybe.
We never repent of having to eaten too little, right? Okay. So nothing is troublesome that we do willingly, right? So number eight, how much pain have cost us the evils which have never happened? Number nine, take things always by their smooth handle. So that one you have to interpret it a little bit. And number ten, when angry, count 10 before you speak. If very angry, 100. So
that's where it came from.
Yeah, so a lot of this practical stuff came from Jefferson. In you know, when he was writing advice to this young grand boy, this boy that was just born,
right?
Grandson to a friend.
All right. The final thoughts on this man.
Yeah. So I think a defining aspect of Jefferson's legacy is the importance of a free society alongside the rule of a free government. Right. And in his inaugural address, he declared that America had the strongest government on earth. But he also highlighted the power of the people as a means that allowed a free government to function and protect the rights of the people. I think Jefferson was one of the first champions of human rights. If you really think about it, right? You know, whether it's freedom of religion, whether it's to open up a university. And you know, the interesting thing, if you think about that, that's why I said Abraham Lincoln, the lot of legacy of Lincoln comes from Jefferson.
Right.
Because when we study Lincoln, we see that Lincoln is also a studious man. And guess who he studied quite a bit? Jefferson, right? So Jefferson actually at times tried to abolish slavery. He even wrote at times how he hated and abhorred slavery. Yet he somehow never managed to do this. But he set the tone, I think, for Abraham and for others to come later down the road to abolish it. Nevertheless, he inspired. And I think one lesson I learned is that sometimes we cannot... We cannot sow the seed, water the plant, see it grow and yield fruit. Sometimes our role is to just
plant the seed
or sow the seed. Yeah,
yeah.
So plant the seed or sow the seed and maybe water it a little bit, and then somebody else will keep watering it. Somebody will see the first sprouts coming, and somebody else will enable it to grow and prune it and enable it to become a big tree. And I think, you know, as I look back through that history, that's why I say, you know, you look at history, say sometimes you feel like what we did is wasted. We did nothing. We achieved nothing. But sowing the seed, right? You know, it's the first step towards a plant being growing, right? Sometimes sowing the seed and watering is like, oh, you wait months and years and you wait months and nothing happens, right? But then suddenly a little sprout comes out and suddenly you say, wow, it's starting to yield, it's traction, right? And I think here's a guy, he inspired and influenced Abraham Lincoln and countless other future generation of American leaders to carry on this legacy and then actually achieve it. And that's why I say he's one of the guys that, like, okay, I need to do Jefferson because before Washington and all the other guys, right? Because this guy is a foundation layer. You know,
he set the vision.
And sometimes it's the toughest thing to do is to lay foundations because you'll never truly be appreciated. Mm. The guy who gets the results is the guy who's truly appreciated. And sometimes, you know, I have to tell my team all this time. Sometimes, you know, I know we're going out there, we're doing stuff that it's breaking our backs, you know, going to schools and setting up these clubs and so on. But you know what? 20 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, right? It'll come back
fruit.
And say, look, that's where it really, and it'll bear fruits, not just, you know, 100-fold fruits. And to me, that's what we as leaders need to say. Sometimes we are in the sowing piece of leadership. Sometimes we are in the final piece, you know, where we are bringing the fruits and we need the right processes to get to optimize that. But depending on where we are in the leadership, we can be the Thomas Jefferson. We need to feel proud and we need to go out with this gusto and be very resolute, you know, and execute regardless of where you are in that process. So here's a guy, visionary of his time. I think we can learn so much from him. I did, you know, just studying him. You know, and I think we can learn that truly, if you want to build a legacy, we have to be long term, you know, like he was, and we have to be a giving leader.
All right. Roshan Tiran from Leadernomics sharing leadership lessons from Thomas Jefferson. He'll be back again, I'm sure, very soon. Happy Chinese New Year to you.
Yep. Happy Chinese New Year to everyone.
Raise your game. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.